Look, here's the things. We live once that we know of, and we're here for a reason. And it's not to be like everybody else. So if you were here just to be like everybody else, don't know, that just doesn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't. So, for me, it's all about exploring, who I am and what it is that I really. What really makes me tick and what really makes me happy and connecting with others and seeing what makes them tick and what makes them happy and seeing how cool we can make this life.
So what we did is we teased this week's guest last week on episode 94 of Uncharted Performance with Mark England. So it should be no surprise that we have the wonderful opportunity to talk to Mike Bloodsow of the Shrug Collective and host of the Bloodsow Show. He is a true pioneer, influencer, and game changer, one of the few individuals that have guided us on our path. We explore a number of incredible topics with Mike, including a tutorial on creating connection, a full body connection with others. And if you listen to last week's episode again, you might be clued in on how we do that. Being present in our relationships, how curiosity can lead us to what we are meant to do. His evolution as a person from what he was a number of years ago to the man he is today. How he identifies himself and who he might become in the future, including the major impact point that set the course. We deconstruct the definition of normal, investigate his views on entrepreneurship, wealth, and success, how Mike identifies which skills to develop, how he has developed them, and what he is concentrating on at the moment, which might surprise you, but has something to do with the rhythm and the value of presence and what is possible through delivering bliss and joy to others. Make sure to check out the show notes on where to find Mike, how to connect with him, how to get in contact with him, and how you can actually spend some time with him in the very near future in person at the training camp for the soul. Not all conversations are created equal, and I hope that this would and will provide you with as much meaning as it did us. And before we let you guys enjoy this episode, I totally forgot to say, hey, Paul Wenzel, this is Uncharted Performance Podcast. Welcome back to episode 95. But if you guys enjoy this episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes and Stitcher. And with that, here is Mike Bloodsow, one of our major influences at Uncharted Performance, of the Shrug Collective and the Bloodsow Show. Enjoy. Mike, hello, sir. How are you doing, man?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We have a mutual friend in common that connected us. So big shout out to Mark England of Procabulary, and he has a fantastic product, fantastic service that he does with Procabulary. My wife and I are actually going through the core language upgrade together and having a really good time. And I believe you actually have a quote unquote discount on your site as well for Mark's Procabulary product, right?
Yeah, if you do the core language upgrade, yeah, you can go on the site or you can get it there, or you can just use the code Bloodsow and people get $100 off of it. So that's always nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So if you guys haven't checked that out yet, there's all the more reason to do so now. But something that you probably don't know that he told us about you when he was last on is that that you are the world's best hugger.
I might be running up on the best hugger challenge, but yeah, I know a lot of great huggers, and I think we've just been practicing.
Perfect. So do you agree with that assessment?
I'm in the top 10 at least. I actually had me and my buddy, we were at a festival a couple months ago down in Costa Rica, and it was a really cool moment because we were hanging out with a group of people, and I won't go into all the details, but essentially I was hugging multiple people, but for maybe a minute at a time. And so it was just like a line of people, and we're just going around hugging and hugging and hugging. And it seems strange to somebody nearby. So this girl comes and walks up. This really cute girl, in fact. She walks up and she goes, "Are you selling hugs?" And I said, "No." She was like, "Why are you hugging so many people?" And she said, "It looks like you're really good at it." And I said, "Oh, yeah. Would you like a hug?" And she said, "Yes, I would love a hug." And this is on the last day of the festival, so I give her this really nice long hug. And then as we step away, she looks at me and says, "You know what? I haven't had a hug all weekend." And she had flown in from, thousands of miles away to come to this festival, and she'd had conversations with people, but no physical touch. And I could tell she really, really enjoyed that hug. And for me, I'm like hugging people all the time. And to think that I went to a festival where there's a lot of love energy, to not hug somebody for 3 days seemed really odd, but I'm glad I got to break that for her.
No, it's awesome. What do you think that comes from, and what is the importance of that physical contact?
Well, I'll tell you where it comes from second, for me anyway. And then, but the importance of of that physical contact and the hugging is, if we want to get really scientific, we could say, it's the release of oxytocin, which is the same hormone that's being released when, you're being held by your mother or nursing your mother's breast. There's a release of oxytocin, and there's different ways of releasing that hormone that creates connection. And when we have connection, that's, it's a lot easier to experience bliss, and it's a lot easier to experience just joy. And I think we've all had experiences where we've really connected with another person. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, it's rare. It's something that only happens every once in a while. And for a lot of people, I think it's also a surprise when it does happen. It's not planned. And so for me, I basically unintentionally got myself in some situations where I learned how to connect with people consciously. I could just say, "Oh, I actually want to experience deep connection right now. I know exactly how to get it." And I actually fell into it in a way, in that I just, out of pure curiosity, I started attending some tantric events. And so studying a little bit of tantra and doing some pujas and having some experiences with other people where we have a facilitator walking us through just simple eye gazing, just looking into somebody's eyes for minutes on end without a break, or just being really learning to be with another human being. And then, starting with that, and then learning how to actually touch somebody in a way that you're being present with them. And I think that for me personally, up until that time, physical touch was a means to an end. It's like a way to get somewhere. And it wasn't until I did some of these practices and these ceremonies that I really learned how to be present with another person, with what is and not where anything is trying to go. And so with that practice, I even learned how to, one day this guy shows me how to do a proper hug. A proper hug, but a hug that's actually meaningful for you. And I'll just walk us through it real quick. And so, and I think I can verbally, normally I show people how to hug, but like if you're the taller person, which is normally the man, or if you're hugging another man and you happen to be the taller person, it's good to drop your entire body from your knees, and then put one knee in between the legs of the other person, and then just put your arms underneath them and hold them. But you're really working on from the bottom of your belly up to your head being in contact with that person. So it's a full body connection. And I know that a lot of times when I hug people, they try to go in for just like the side hug or like the chest touches, but they don't want any other part of their body touching during a hug. And sometimes, you know, I pull people in for the full on hug effect, and I can tell that they're a little uncomfortable, but they like it too.
How do you break down the barrier? Because some people might be resistant to being hugged.
You know what? That's all up to them. You know, I don't try to like, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, just honoring people's boundaries. And, you know, if that's something that I'm comfortable with, that's fine. But, you know, a lot of times if someone says, hey, you know, I was like, hey, what's going on for you? You know, like I might ask them a question that gets them thinking about something they may have actually never considered. They just know it's uncomfortable. They don't know why. And so for me, it's, you know, like if someone doesn't, you know, if they pull away, it's fine. But normally if they're around me long enough, we end up in some type of conversation where they end up being a much better hugger by the end.
Got it. Were you always good at hugging, or was there a shift or a point in your lifetime when this idea of expressing bliss and joy and creative connection present itself as being more important, more valuable to you?
No, it was definitely something I was not good at when I was younger. In fact, I was terrified of connecting with somebody else or having deep intimacy. And I didn't even know how to approach it. And I wasn't raised in a way that would allow that. And so I would say my first exposure to that level of intimacy and that level of connection was at Burning Man. And my this was 4.5 years ago, and I just so happened to get into a camp that my buddy invited me to, that the theme of the camp is love and relationships. And so there's a lot of love coaches there and life coaches and people. And there were every single day, there were multiple workshops on that were love and relationship workshops. And so I had never encountered anything like this before in my life. I was just this guy from Memphis, Tennessee, who heard about Burning Man, that wanted to go. And I got there, and it took me days to get over the culture shock and to really start learning. But I was there to learn, and I attended all these workshops, and I went out at night with the people, and it was just really, really amazing. But it was there that I really got some insight into, you know, it being okay to have physical touch with people and multiple people. And also, one of the things that we really dove in to in my first introduction with the conversation of masculinity and femininity. And up until that point, I had the only thing I really understood was gender, you know, being male or female. Mm. And I associated being masculine with being male and feminine as female. And I didn't think there was actually a difference or a whole other conversation happening. And I was introduced to that conversation while I was there too, which was really enlightening. And so I walked away from Burning Man that week. It took me, I would say, a month before I felt like I was able to integrate with society as a normal human being again. And that was really earth-shattering for me. And it after that is when I started seeking out, my wife and I had moved to SoCal and started seeking out, you know, just workshops and teachers who understood these things. And so I attended these workshops and these seminars and these retreats, and, you know, over the years, I found a lot of the stuff that I had been looking for and just didn't know to look for it. I would have been too embarrassed when I was younger to even have a conversation about it, or, you know, I just really, you know, I, originally, you know, from Memphis, Tennessee, to going in the military and then going back to Memphis for school. It's like I was basically a Southern guy from the South.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a lot of these types of conversations just weren't common. And so, you know, embedding myself in a culture where it's normal for years on end, you know, I did that on purpose. And it was after attending Burning Man. I think it's one of those things where I got drawn to Burning Man. I got drawn to SoCal and Encinitas, where my wife and I lived for a while. And I was drawn there because it's like part of me knew what I was looking for, but consciously I didn't. But I got there nonetheless.
Got it. What is, you mentioned the kind of the different types of normal, the normal in the past and the quote unquote normal now. So can you define for me and the listeners from your experience and the present moment, what is normal?
For me? Well, you know, I it's funny because I use the word, you know, normal can be two different approaches. Mm-hmm. And when you come from a scientific background or a medical background, a lot of times we use the word normal to describe the average. You know, what's a normal range? What's an average range? What is normative behavior? What is considered normal amongst this group of people? And we could say what's normal amongst people in the South, or what's normal amongst Americans as a whole. But you know, truly all we have is our, you know, for me, I can talk my own personal normal, which is been shifting quite a bit. And so, you know, when I think about what I used to think was normal versus what I think is normal now is really just a set of judgments. And so anything that didn't fit inside of my world when I was younger was I would just judge it as something that was not normal to me. And so I would then put it in this category of weird or strange or dislike or uncomfortable. You know, I think it's part of my personality to push into discomfort. And I go, why is it that I'm so afraid of this over here? And I dive into it. And so over the years, what's become normal for me, and I think my normal, we could go back 10 years, and my normal 10 years ago was, let's see, 2008. I was still considered abnormal by the people I was surrounded by. You know, I had opened my own gym. I didn't have a job. I you know, lived in my gym. I was exhibiting strange behavior, but not so much to be an outcast. Whereas now I would say some of my behavior, depending on where I lived, I would be considered so strange that people wouldn't know what to do with me. So depending on where I live. And so, yeah, my normal now is very, I've traveled a really long spectrum. So I came from one place and I'm in another place. And so everything in between is easy for me to accept. And even the things, because I've traveled so far, and what I am willing to accept and not judge, I am much more easily able to accept new things because I understand how much of my previous perspective has changed, and I understand that it's going to continue to change. And you know, there's research where psychologists have done studies where they look at people and say, you know, how much have you changed in the last decade? And they go, oh my gosh, I've changed so much. You know, I'm not even the same person. It was like, well, how much do you think? And they line the questions up a little bit differently than this, but they make it where they can get good data. And they go, well, how much do you think you're going to change in the next decade? And people go, oh, I'm going to be the same person. I'm not going to change at all. And so there's this strange perception that we have as human beings, where we can completely accept how we're different now than we used to be, and we're actually happy about it. But being different in the future actually makes us feel uncomfortable, and we don't even want to think about it or accept that that could be the case. And so what my normal is now is very, very flexible. And my normal now is I could not conceive. I could not conceive what it'd be like to work a 9-to-5 job. I don't know what it would like. I think I would rather just live in the woods than have a job. I can't fathom being working inside, that kind of a system. Now, like if I wanted to partner with somebody and working on a project, that'd be different. But where I'm at now is I think is me and a lot of other people are on the cutting edge of what work and what jobs and what entrepreneurship and business look like for the future. And we're really, creating that. And I think as time goes on, it will be normal to be an entrepreneur or at least a freelancer or a contractor. But I think the days of working 9-to-5s are over. And people, once their consciousness can break free of what was created by our education system, the school system, and what was created by the unions and the deals the unions have made with companies in the past to create the 40-hour work week. These are all very artificial constructs of what normal is. And so, and these were just things that were put in place by businessmen and by gangsters and politicians as ways of creating structure for us to move forward. And it's totally cool. It was very good that that all happened, but the new normal is going to be that we are autonomous over our time, and we are also going to be much pickier with the types of work that we do in the future.
So let's pull on that thread and let's have a hypothetical that I have the pleasure of sitting with you next to you on a plane, and we're going to what is a place that you've never been to but you want to go to?
Thailand.
Thailand. All right, so we are flying from LA to Thailand, and I ask you, who are you and what do you do for a living?
Who am I and what do I do for a living? that's a tough one. I would say I'm a happy person who is looking to see where I can serve others. What I do for a living is I help bring new ideas that people may not have considered before and make them digestible. I think I bring pretty complicated or abstract ideas into a conversation where people can understand it really well. And so, my job is to just highlight what the very next step is. I don't need to. I do like to paint a big picture of the future, but at the same time, when I'm having a conversation with an individual, I like to ask, what does this person need to hear right now to make a step forward in their own evolution? So, and I also I run a media company. I help highlight other people who are doing the same. So my whole focus is on is coaching and helping and highlighting influencers and helping to create influencers and being an influencer myself on shaping how we think people could live their lives better.
What is the biggest influence thing you have had on others or someone?
Was the biggest influence I've had on somebody else?
Yeah, or something.
Oh man. I get a lot of messages from a lot of my audiences from the CrossFit world, and a lot of the messages are, I started following you because I want to get in better shape, or I wanted six pack abs, or I did your program because of this or that, but lo and behold, my entire life got better. I broke up with my girlfriend and I got a new one that was awesome. And I quit my job and I started the project I've been wanting to start and this and that. And so, those are the kinds of messages I receive that are really like I really enjoy getting. You know, and sometimes it's from people who have bought one of my programs or have been involved with me more closely. And then sometimes there's people who they've just listened to the show, and I'm shocked that they've gotten so much out of just listening to the show. But I have one friend. His name's Daniel, and I happened to be in California like 5 years ago, and he hit me up on social media and said, "Hey, can I just meet up with you?" I happened to be hanging out at Seal Fit. He was interning for a gym in SoCal, or actually I think it was in Mexico or something like that. And he wanted to open his own gym. So I gave him a little bit of advice, and he went and did whatever I told him to do something. He went and did it. And then I held a workshop, a couple years later, he attended that. He ended up, because of the advice I gave him first, he opened his own gym, and then he came to my retreat. And then basically over the last 5 years, he's showed up to every single thing that I put on. And I don't think he would care if I shared this. I think he'd be excited. But the amount of transformation he's experienced over the last 5 years since we met, and he's told me repeatedly that, it was meeting me that really, and a lot of my guidance has helped him. And that is, he went from somebody who just, he had the desire to open a gym, but he didn't know why. And he was interning and he wasn't making any money, to owning a successful gym in San Diego and having, making a difference in other people's lives. And then in the last year, my wife and I have coached him and his wife and got them, or fiance, and gotten them through a lot of stuff. And they've gone through a lot of stuff and made a lot of transformation in their relationship too. And I think that they have both experienced things that they didn't know was even possible. They didn't even know. The ability to experience feelings and the ability to experience joy, and really seeing how much of the conditioning from their past, from their childhood, was dictating their present and future. And really, we really spent some time with them disassembling who they thought they were, and really showing, helping them remember who they really are and be happy and experience connection. And, I think that's one story that I can be really proud of. And that's, I see the two of them, and they're happier, and they're living healthy. They've lost weight because, even though they're running a gym, mm-hmm. they were both a little heavy, and that was all emotional stuff. And that was all understanding that, they're really, a lot of what their behavior was just due to the patterns of that were embedded as when they were kids, and uncovering all that, and then just watching them become healthier and happier day by day, and watching their business thrive, and just all of it. And so I guess that would be one example of the type of impact I like to have in the world.
And what I'll do is I'll share another one with you, and you are talking to him right now. I used to be in that normal that we talked about in terms of the 9 to 5, and then my brother introduced me to Barbell Shrugged about, I would say, 3 or 4 years ago, and this my idea of what I wanted to pursue and what life could be started to shift dramatically. And, skip a few steps. I now have a podcast. I am very fortunate to be a CrossFit Olympic weightlifting coach, and living the new normal that you described, or what the new normal would be. And there are two people that are directly, that have directly influenced me. That's my brother and my wife. And then I would say the third person or group would be you and the crew at Shrugged. So feel free to share that maybe in the future, but I just want to, I've had the opportunity and the very, I guess, blind luck to have a number of surreal moments over the past 2 years with the many guests that I've had a chance to have conversations such as this one with. And it's very unique because we just had our, quote unquote, second birthday at Uncharted. And I would never know thought to have a podcast if it wasn't for Shrugged to escape, quote unquote, escape the 9 to 5 and really pursue my passion and who I really am. And I was building this character over a course of, 10 years. I'm gonna be in my mid-30s now, and I was climbing that culprit ladder and then fighting for these things that I thought were valuable but weren't really bringing much value to my life. It was very selfish of me. It was very, fiscally and then monetarily based, which is important, but obviously I don't think as important as many people place importance to it. And it's through your work, through your episodes, through your conversations, I clearly see and hear and reminisce and reflect of you always talking about abundance and having that abundance mindset. And that really shifted my way of thinking. So thank you, Mike, for setting me on my path, along with your friends over at Shrugged and the crew over there as well.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for telling me. That's awesome. Love to hear it, man.
Yeah,
It
for sure.
really adds fuel to the fire.
There you go.
Yeah,
And
very cool.
I mentioned my wife, and you've mentioned yours several times in our conversation already. How did your relationship change after the Burning Man experience, and when you started exploring and reaching out to those teachers in what you wanted to learn and what you wanted to find out?
I was way more into it than she was.
Okay.
And she'll tell you that the majority of the transformational work that we've done, I've been the first one in, and she's been kicking and screaming for some of it, or there were moments where she felt like she was going to get left behind, and then she jumped in, or she just refused to. And so it was not easy in the beginning. I just the type of person I am is I'm not really gonna wait for other people to go exploring. So if I want to go do something, I'm gonna go do it. And it doesn't mean that I'm actually gonna leave anybody behind, but I might my internal journey, I might go pretty deep on my own, and then there might be a sense of like of a gap between me and other people. But as far as saying, as far as physically walking away from a situation, that's not normally. I'm not like going and living in a hut somewhere away from everybody. But I did dive in to a lot of things very, very quickly and aggressively, and it did make my wife uncomfortable for a number of years, I would say a couple of years. And then she had some experiences that really had allowed her to have some breakthroughs and understand. And I would say now we're very much so on the same page. And it was not all easy in the beginning. So a lot of challenge. But the truth is our relationship at the time was not really great. It was mediocre. And so it was I wasn't happy with being mediocre. I wanted us to have an extraordinary relationship, and I did lead the way in creating a relationship that is truly extraordinary. Because I mean, look, here's the things: we live once that we know of, and we're here for a reason, and it's not to be like everybody else. So if you were here just to be like everybody else, don't know. That just doesn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't. So, you know, for me, it's all about exploring, you know, who I am and what it is that I really, what really makes me tick and what really makes me happy, and connecting with others and seeing what makes them tick and what makes them happy, and seeing how cool we can make this life.
Do you think you would be here now if you, let's say you never start the gym, do you think you would get to now if you chose a different path?
I think I would get to this stage of consciousness for sure. Mm-hmm. Would it have happened sooner or later? It likely wouldn't have happened on the same timeline, but I think we're all on a path, and the speed at which it happens is dictated by how quickly we adopt certain things or let go of certain things. And so I think that the path of entrepreneurship does expedite things for people.
Is there anything that, do you have any regrets, or if you don't have any regrets, would you have done anything differently?
No regrets. Everything that I would do differently is how I live my life now. So it's like, I don't want to do anything differently than my past, because that would create a different present. And my present is something I'm very content with, and very happy about. And, so it's hard to say that I regret or I would do anything different, but there's definitely, I mean, the way that I communicate is different now than it's ever been. The way I do business and the way I view business is different. The way I view myself is different. If the same situations occur now that happened in the past, I definitely manage them differently. And the way that I am and my way of being that I am now is so, is in such a way that the same types of situation that would have occurred previously just don't even happen anymore. So I'm extremely grateful for my past and extremely grateful for everything that's happened up to this point, because I feel as though I live the most amazing life, and a life that I could have never even imagined, and experiencing a level of joy and happiness that I wouldn't want to remove anything from my past that could have contributed to that. And even the things that were the most painful parts of my past would have created the growth necessary to have this level of joy now.
If you had the opportunity, which you will in a second, to describe or define wealth and success, how would you define it?
Oh, wealth and success. So I'll talk about wealth first. Mm-hmm. Wealth is knowing that you yourself are valuable, and knowing that any moment that you accept yourself and value yourself no matter what, and that having the confidence that you bring value to the table to other people. I know, you know, I experience wealth because I know in any single moment that I am valuable, and that's really all I need. And because I have this belief, because I know that I'm valuable from moment to moment and every moment, it actually does create a situation where I naturally pick up the skills necessary to create value for others in which they want to give me money. But the money isn't the wealth. The wealth is the knowing, and the being valuable. Now, success is not letting anything get in the way of my my health and happiness. And so if I have $1 million in the bank, but I'm not healthy or happy, then I am on the other side of success. It's not something I'm actually experiencing. And so for me, true success is not settling, and I just don't settle when it comes to health and happiness. And when I'm in a place where I'm not settling, then I'm experiencing success.
You mentioned skills. What skills have you gone after, developed, or are continuing to develop now that have allowed you to become the you that we are talking about?
So, I'll actually look, point out my my old business coach, Brian Franklin. He wrote a book called The Last Safe Investment, and he laid out the four categories of skills that you could develop that create value in the world. The first is physical skills. That would be, physical labor. The second is technical skills. That might be like accounting or programming. Creative skills. These are, people who work in business, strategy, artists, musicians. And there's a lot of creative skills necessary in business. And then you have interpersonal skills, which is leadership, sales, et cetera. And so for me personally, I'm a personal development nerd. And I think most people who are really good into personal development, they're working on any of these four categories at any given time. I don't know. I went off on a tangent. Now I'm forgetting your question exactly, but what was it again?
No, it's all good. No, in
So I'll make
terms
sure I
of,
answer it.
I think we're getting there. No, it's essentially you've gone through, you've traveled, as you mentioned, stealing your words. You've traveled from
Right.
a previous identity to who you are now. What skills have you acquired, or are you
What
continuing to,
skills?
yeah, or continuing to acquire, develop
Man,
that have?
I'll start with physical skills. It's
Okay.
like the physical skills I'm learning constantly is just learning how to breathe and move with more grace. And I think that being somebody who moves with grace and has really great breathing mechanics and control over breath is a person who can walk into a room and can bring extreme presence. I learned from Brandon Routh, who he played Superman in 2006, and I interviewed him and I've hung out with him a bit, and he talked about how he was taught how to move differently as Superman, move as somebody who's powerful and graceful. And so when he's playing Clark Kent, he's a little clumsy, and then when he's playing Superman, he moves with extreme power and grace. And you can watch the movie and go, oh, wow, this is true. And we all know people. We know people who move with power and grace. And we know people who move with, they're just clumsy, or, they, even people who may be able to lift a lot of weight, their coordination is not great. And so for me, the physical skills, they actually, all these skills overlay with each other. So I have these physical skills, which is just maintaining my health and making myself healthy. But at the same time, the more grace and power I generate from my body, actually helps me create a better interpersonal skills where, as a leader, as somebody who walks in the room, I have expanded presence. I can, I get noticed more often, which is a good thing. People notice me. So then they listen to me. And so now that they're listening to me, I now have influence, and where I have influence, people want to follow, and where people want to follow, we go. And so, a very simple thing like a physical practice of creating power and grace, and that's being stronger and moving gracefully and breathing well and controlling myself in that way. In regard to technical skills, I don't. I'm working on drumming right now. And then creatively and interpersonal, I would say the majority of my focus has been on interpersonal skills, and that is being present with other people. And I think podcasting has been an incredible tool for improving my presence with other people, because when you're in an interview like we are right now, even though we're doing it over a call, we're both having to practice extreme presence with the other person and true listening. And so that is a really cool skill to develop as well. But, you know, there's, you know, I over the years, I've attended marketing conferences and sales conferences, and I've read a lot of books on business operations. And so a lot of my focus has gone into systems theory, and really thinking about, you know, I started looking at systems theory and whole systems theory in regard to business. But I also look at, you know, I use whole systems theory as a way of looking at the human body and at the planet and how we all operate together. And so, I think one of the things that we could all learn more about that would make the world a better place is whole systems theories, or whole system theory. And so, these are just some areas that I focused on. And I pick up stuff here and there from people, you know, a little bit better copywriting or something like that. But
for sure,
that's not really my focus.
No, when you mentioned moving with grace, the first thing that popped to mind was you running on the beach in Costa Rica. And it looked flawless. It looked very, it looked beautiful to watch. On
thank you
on Instagram.
Yeah.
You mentioned drumming. Why drumming?
You know, I think that one of the things that that's such a good question. The probably because I have a good answer, but actually, I want to work on drumming because I wanted to improve my rhythm and my timing.
Okay.
And specifically timing. I noticed that, by the way, the way we do anything is the way we do everything. And I have put, if we were to look at all categories, music is probably the category in which I put the least amount of attention and developing a skill. I can't play an instrument. I don't play an instrument. And the drumming thing really interests me because of the timing. And I've noticed that when I look at my life over the years, my ideas are good. My execution is great. My timing has been off.
Okay.
And so when I tend to strike early, I don't wait. And there's been times where I've waited too long. Because the last time I went too early, so now I'm going to wait longer, and my timing's off. I bet a lot of people listening to this would go, oh, you know, I see that in my life too. And even in conversation, my timing in conversations. So we could say that, like, my timing in business has been, you know, oh, I have an idea. Let's do it now. It's like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't do this thing while we're doing these five other things. But also in conversation is timing in conversation is waiting for the right moment to ask the right question or something like that. But with drumming, there's so much of the attention is being put into the beat, the tempo, the timing. And so drumming really interests me right now because I think that as I improve my rhythm and my tempo with drumming, it'll improve my tempo and rhythm in life.
Beautiful. Beautiful, man. I'm not going to let him off the hook. And so I'm going to bring it back to where we started. And that's our friend Mark. Because he gave us some quote unquote dirt on you or something that most people don't know about him. So anything about Mark that most people might not know about him, or maybe a little dirt. Mark England.
Well, dirt. Oh man. You know, the more I get to know Mark, the bigger I'm a much bigger fan as time goes on. You know what? Man, he used to go to a lot of festivals. I think he's interested in going to festivals again. Man, I don't know if I want to give too much dirt on this guy. I think it's good. He used to run Iboga Clinic in Asia, and which is a heavy psychedelic substance. Before he got into language,
Okay.
he's just an awesome guy. He's the kind of guy that he and I are a lot alike in that that's why we're friends, and that. He's also digging for the thing he thinks is the most high leverage thing that we can improve in our lives. I think that's what attracted him to language. And truth be told, I think language is one of the most high impact things we could be working on. And so we're alike in that, both athletic backgrounds broke ourselves when we were younger. Now looking for magic, looking for the thing that's gonna make the biggest difference in our lives and the lives of others. And so, Mark is a he's a seeker. And so the more I get to know him, the more I'm surprised but not surprised at some of the stuff that he's done in order to try to find the way. But the dirt on Mark is he's tried a lot of stuff. He's tried a lot of stuff I've tried, and he's tried a lot of stuff I have not tried. And yeah, man, we get into some weird stuff. Like we like to poison ourselves with frogs,
I heard.
mostly. That's
Yeah.
like the new favorite thing is to burn holes in your arm and then take this frog venom and drop it on there till you throw up. And then, it sounds crazy, and it's really awesome. So. And I'll be dropping a podcast where we talk about that extensively.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, but dirt on Mark, man, all around, just amazing guy. He's gotten into some weird stuff. So when he talks and makes suggestions, I listen because I know that he's dug deep. So worth listening to.
Awesome. And we'll link that up. We'll link that. I'll link up the conversations that we have with Mark to this episode as well, in case you guys missed them. One thing I want to close with something that you brought up earlier, and that's kind of the fear of looking ahead, or slightly stated differently, the fear of changing or being the same person in 10 years or 15 years. So I'm going to pose the question to you. Who are you going to be? Where are you going to be in 10 to 15 years?
Who knows, man? Who knows? I 10 years ago, I was 26 at the time. If you would have told me that this would be my life that I'm living right now, I would be in utter amazement, and I would be asking how? How did that happen? And so I'm actually counting on my life in a decade from now not being recognizable to me now. And there are certain things about my life in 10 years that I think will be true, and that is I will be living on a large piece of property with in a community type environment, multiple homes on one property that'll be 10 to 100 acres. I wouldn't be surprised if I was living in a different country at this time. And with the way technology is going, it makes it very unpredictable. But I do see us living in a more of a communal environment, and also being deep into the retreat space. Running retreats and helping people improve their performance, helping people heal their wounds, and just really develop as human beings, and is where my passion's at. So, and doing it in person is something that I've over time learned that I really, really enjoy doing. But for me, I love media. I love creating videos. I love doing interviews. And so I think we're just going to see better interviews, more awesome videos all the time, and retreats that are life changing.
I'm very
No
excited.
big deal.
No, yeah, no. I'm very excited, and it's been, again, a fanboy moment, as you know, a 35 as big of a fanboy moment a 35-year-old can have, but you know, it's been a pleasure to learn from you indirectly and watch you grow, and then obviously, and for the past 50 minutes to an hour, it's been a once in a lifetime experience. Hopefully I get a chance to meet you in person. Mark did throw it out there to meet you guys down in Richmond, but I'll be in Iceland, so unfortunately that won't happen. But I'm very excited to where you and where you're headed and where Strugged is going, and the relationships and the influence that you have had on me personally and everybody else. So with before we close, for somebody that might not be familiar that's listening to Uncharted with Mike Bledsoe, where can they find you? Where can they reach out to you? What's coming up in the very short term for you?
Awesome. We have the Shrug Collective. If you go to shrugcollective.com, that's a bunch of shows that I produce. And then if you want more of just my show, you can go over to thebledsoeshow.com. And over there I have a lot of interviews that are just amazing. I also have a live events page there where you can see some live events that I'm doing that you alluded to. If you want to message me, I think the best spot, you can, if you subscribe on my website, then we can get into an email correspondence. If you want to hit me up on Instagram, it's Mike_Bledsoe. And you can shoot me some messages over there. Always dig it. And one thing I want to throw in here, a little plug, is I'm doing a retreat next month called Training Camp for the Soul. And if you go to trainingcampforthesoul.com, you'll be able to see some of the stuff we're up to. And if you like this conversation and things we talked about, that week is a retreat that we put together that I really, me and a couple other people, we've distilled down what we think makes the biggest impact for human development. That's what you get in 6 days.
When is that happening, Mike?
That one, the next one's going to be May 17th through 23rd.
All right, cool. Got it. Anything else, man?
You should come to that. That's it. That's all I got.
No, good point. I'm actually in Iceland from the 16th through June 1st. So maybe,
unbelievable.
Maybe next one, though. But no,
yeah, Mike, yeah.
No, for sure. I would love to, man. You have to come out to Cleveland sometimes if you've never been. It's a beautiful
Cleveland
place. Yeah.
Oh, you know, I've got to been to Cleveland. I've been to Columbus, I've been in Cincinnati, but I haven't made it to Cleveland yet. I'll make it up there.
Yeah, just come during the summer. Right now it's a little cold still. Actually, it's snowing. But
you're talking about Ohio, right?
Yeah, it's Ohio. Well, yeah, it's right by the – right
not by the Cleveland, lake. Some other state.
No, not Cleveland.
Kind of like there's a Paris, Tennessee.
No. Yeah, Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah. No, Mike, thank you so much, man. I had a blast. Again, I have a tendency to wear my heart on my sleeve, and my emotions sometimes get away in the way of my words. So again, it's been very cool to talk to you, man, one-on-one.
Appreciate it, pal. Really enjoyed doing the interview.
Another amazing episode in the books, fam. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. If you are new to the show, don't be afraid to check out other episodes. And if you dig the content, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you ever have any questions, feedback, or you just want to hit us up, please don't hesitate. Email address is contact@unchartedperformance, or you can hit me up directly at powell@unchartedperformance.com. Facebook and Instagram at Uncharted Performance, and if Twitter is your thing, at Reach Uncharted. And give us a follow and tag us to let us know who and where you are. As always, thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and talk to you next week. Cheers, guys.